podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. Hey everyone, I'm Jen, and I'm with Karen. Yay, Karen's back, and Brittany this week. And we are going to discuss one of the new books out this fall called The Scorpion Rules by Erin Bow. But first, let's get caught up with everyone. So, Karen, how have you been? We've missed you.
Oh, thank you. I've been sick and life stuff has been going on, but much better now. And I'm excited to talk about all these different books that I've been reading and to go to New York Comic Con. So things are definitely looking up. I feel like October is my month, so we can only hope.
Excellent, excellent. And Brittany, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Yes.
You know, fall TV's back. No time for reading, so I'm going to be such a treat on Book Hype.
Guys. But tomorrow is Brittany's big day, because tomorrow is October 6th.
Which means everything is coming in the mail.
And there will be singing. She did promise the show, folks. She did. Yeah. So Carry On by Rainbow Rowell will be in the mail tomorrow for Brittany. Mm-hmm. And she's just a little excited. Just a little.
I'm also like really almost equally excited for the Harry Potter illustrated book. I am so excited. I'm gonna like have gloves on to open it because it's just gonna be so pretty. I don't want a fingerprint to like smudge it.
Photos of that, like, that needs to happen.
It's gonna be like, I'm in like a hazmat suit opening myself.
You know, October 6th is the day, because that's when Magnus Chase comes out. That's when the Throne of Fire graphic novel comes out. I feel like just everything.
Clearly, it's a big fall book day, October 6th. Mark your calendars, kids. So, let's start off with what we've been reading lately. I'll start off. I read one book because I've been kind of not well. So, I haven't really done anything very active lately. Not that reading is active, but, you know. So, I read Dumplin' by Julie Murphy. This is coming out, it just came out. It came out September 15th. And it's about a self-proclaimed fat girl, Willow Dean, who has kind of always been comfortable with who she is and knows exactly who she is. And she doesn't care that she's a little overweight and, you know, a self-proclaimed fat girl. Her mom dubbed her Dumplin', and that's kind of the name she goes by. And she's really cool with all of that. And then some things start to change in her life. And she takes a job at a fast food shop, and she meets this boy who's a hot former jock, and her perception starts to change, even though his hasn't necessarily changed of her. He thinks this is who she is, but she starts to doubt who she is and loses her self-confidence. And it's a really great story. It's very insightful in a lot of ways, and I don't know, I really enjoyed reading it, so I definitely think you guys should check it out. All right, so Miss Karen, because you read a lot more things than I did, let's get to you. What have you been reading?
Yeah, well, I've been away for so long, so they've kind of built up. I've had some time to be reading, but I'll group them together so that it's not just me talking for 10 minutes straight. The first few that I've read are part of the Ivy Years series, which I've talked about before. We've got Understatement of the Year, Blonde Date, and The Year We Hid Away, all by Serena Bowen, and they were all fantastic. Blonde Date is a novella that goes in the middle of the series, and I didn't think that the problem with novellas is you don't always have time to like really fall in love with the characters, but she did it so well that it really stuck out to me, and I really liked all of those. And I'm currently reading the next one in the series, but having a little trouble getting into it. I think I just need to sit down and keep reading, because I know I'll love it. She's a really good writer, and I really like this series. And then I also read The Girl Without a Name and Little Black Lies by Sandra Block, and absolutely fell in love with this. I don't know if you would necessarily call it a series. They're basically about the same person, and it's just like you can read them out of order, but they're about the same person, kind of like a mystery thriller type of thing. And it's about this woman who works in a psychiatric ward, and she takes care of her patients. She's like a resident, and she has her own issues. Like, she has ADHD, and she has like this really troubled past. And while she's trying to figure out her past, she also tries to figure out what's going on with some of her patients. And each book takes on like a different patient and a different aspect of her life. And they were so good. Like, I'm not huge into the crime books. I think it's just because I haven't read a whole lot of them, so they don't necessarily like really intrigue me. But after reading these, I'm really excited to start reading, first of all, more of her series, which I need the third book to come out like as soon as possible, but other books like this, because they're really cool. So I'll start picking up more of those, I think. And then I read The Sword of Summer by Rick Riordan. Can you hear the smile in my voice? My cheeks are right now. Yeah,
everything just, the whole tone totally changed.
Anytime she even, like, I feel like there are, like, little glittery butterflies coming off of every message she sent. Like, she even just types me. She'll send me, like, she'll be like, okay, but is that too late for you for me to give you this book? Like, I feel like little fairies are just going to show up with a book to me, like, just based on Karen's good spirits.
Well, can I tell you guys, I'll let you in on a little secret. Karen gets to interview Rick tomorrow. Yeah. So I got the email, and I was like, have you looked at your email? And she's like, no. And so I put a little message in our hypeable group because I knew what her reaction was going to be. But I was like, yep, Karen's probably dying of joy right now. It's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. So it was really funny. She was super excited. And it's going to be awesome that you get to, like, interview him and meet him after loving his books for so long. So
yeah,
I'm super excited for you.
Thank you. It's, you know, I have been reading his books for so long, and I've never met him. Like, all the things that we go to in BEA and, you know, Comic-Con and all this stuff, and he goes on tours every year. I have never gotten the chance. I've seen him speak, but I've never met him. So, yeah, I'm freaking out just a little bit. But anyway, embarrassment aside, The Sword of Summer is really good. If you like Percy Jackson, you're going to love this book. I'm not going to talk about it too much because it is going to be our October book.
We haven't read it yet, so shush.
Yes, well, I just want to say that it's got all of the sass of Percy Jackson and then maybe some extra sass just for good measure. And it's a little bit darker and grittier and more tragic than Percy Jackson has gotten. So good for, you know, people who grew up on Percy Jackson or maybe a little bit older now, or people like me who are older when they found Percy Jackson and kind of want to get into the more serious side of it too. So definitely two thumbs up for that. I really loved it. So I hope everybody else does too. And then last but not least, Monstrous by Marjorie Liu, illustrated by Sana Takeda, because this is a comic book. It's a new comic book by Marjorie Liu, and it's about this girl who has some sort of connection to these creatures called Leviathans that rule the earth, and they're not respected. People are afraid of them, and they use them as like slaves and pets and all this other stuff, but she has this bond with one of them, and it gives her these extra powers. And I've only read the first issue, but it was really good, and the artwork is stunning. It's really kind of like grotesque, but also super cute. It's hard to describe. There's this little creature that has little fox ears and a little fox tail, and she holds her tail when she's afraid, and it's absolutely adorable. And then in the next pane, you have the main character, like, killing somebody with a sword, and all this blood is spurting everywhere, and it can get really graphic, but the way that they balance that is really interesting to me. And the main character has a part of her arm missing, which I think is really cool, and I love the fact that, first of all, it's about women. Like, all the main characters are women. I think I saw maybe one or two guys in the entire first issue. And it's about war and the struggles of war and the repercussions of war. And it all has to do with these women and how they're dealing with it. And the fact that they're not shying away from how dark and horrific that can be is really cool to me. So I'm really excited about that. It's coming out in November, and I'll definitely be picking up the second issue when it comes out.
That's pretty awesome. All right, Miss Brittany, what have you been reading? I know you're patiently waiting for your books tomorrow, but have you been reading anything in the meantime?
I read one book, which, you know, is pretty good with all the shows premiering. So I read Art in the Blood by Bonnie McBird, and it's another Sherlock Holmes novel because you know me. Love those Sherlock Holmes novels. And this one, I will say, I enjoyed so much. I was kind of half expecting to, just because Sherlock's a little older in it, and, you know, he, like, it's a new adventure, and it's written like Doyle would write. Like, it's, like, set in an older time. I've been reading a lot of modern things lately, and it was kind of nice to get back into that world for a little bit, especially right before, or closer to, because who knows if it's ever going to happen, the BBC special that's going to be set in the Victorian era. But the mystery is good, and, like, Sherlock, it starts off, and Sherlock Holmes is, like, so depressed, and he's, like, there's no cases, he's, like, really heavily using cocaine, and, like, Watson's, like, come on, there's this letter and a murder in Paris, so they go to Paris, and then there's, like, this whole big conspiracy thing with children are missing, and, like, they have to find this one guy, and, like, Sherlock's trying to, like, you know, snap out of his, like, addiction again and get back into it, and I thought it was, like, a really cool, not only personal story for Sherlock, but a mystery as well. So that comes out tomorrow too. So pick it up. And that's all I read.
That's good though. That's good. You know, you had things to do. Brittany covers like 5 million TV shows. So
and when someone's like, listen, I can't recap, I'm like, yeah, no problem.
I know. Let me do one more. Why not?
This time I actually waited. Like, I let the message sit in the group for, like, 5 days, and no one said anything. And then the writer who covers the show personally messaged me and was like, hey, do you think you would mind recapping this? And I'm like, all right. I told them, I was like, listen, I was going to offer anyway, but I wanted to give everyone else a fighting chance. Clearly, everyone was clamoring to recap these shows.
And I would totally recap Big Bang Theory because it's something I watch, but I wasn't getting out of work until it was like already started, and I knew I wouldn't have time to do it. So
I know. Well, I'm doing it. I'm editing it right now.
You're such a champ.
I know.
All right. So Karen, do you want to remind everyone what our October book is?
Yes.
One more time.
Sure. Not a problem. Our October book is Magnus Chase and the Gods of Asgard, The Sword of Summer by Rick Riordan, which you can listen to on audible.com. And I have not listened to the audiobook, obviously, but I'm really excited to actually. I think I might pick it up because Magnus Chase has this really great humor about him where he's just completely snarky, and I can't wait to hear what the narrator would sound like for that. So I haven't heard of this guy doing anything before, Christopher Gutig. I'm not familiar with him, but very excited to possibly hear what he does. So you can pick that up at audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
All right, now let's get on with the main event. Let's talk a little bit about this book, The Scorpion Rules by Aaron Bow. So I read this book ages ago, like months ago. So, and I haven't talked to you guys about how you liked it. So, Brittany, why don't you go ahead and start? Did you like this book? Is it a buy, borrow, or nothing for you? Where are we at?
Oh, nothing is an option now?
Well, you know,
no, I'm just kidding.
I feel like we should include it, but I try not to like publicize it too much.
No, I'm just kidding, because I'm going to go with buy anyway. This is the first book out of, I think, all the books since I started on Book Hype where we've, like, picked a book that's in a series that I want to keep reading the series. I really, really loved this. It's very world building focused, and I loved it. I loved the world. I wanted to stay in it. I loved all the ideas of it. It was kind of familiar, yet completely not familiar by the end. And I really, really enjoyed this book a lot more than I was expecting to. So buy it. Wait for the next one, like I am.
Awesome. Karen, how about you?
This is interesting. I'm definitely going to go with Borrow. Not that I didn't enjoy it, but it left a lot to be desired. And I really liked the concept of it, but I felt like the execution was just lacking something. And I don't really even know why. I actually did enjoy it. I thought it was a good read, but I'm not too concerned about finding that follow-up book. So I'm definitely going to have to go with Borrow.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is interesting.
It is. Wow. I'm going to say bye. And because I think it was a very different book. I mean, so many times you pick up a book and it's got this apocalyptic or, you know, post-apocalyptic feel to it or whatever. And you kind of get the same, you go down the same road. There's the same things going on. And I think this book had a lot of different things going on. I think there were the concept behind the book that you have this overarching character that's in charge of keeping the peace, and what he really is, I think, is fascinating and very, very different from most of the books we've read recently. So I really liked it. And I liked the character progression as well. I think we saw a lot of growth in some of the characters. So I liked it a lot. I was down with it. I would read the second book. So, moving on from there, and Karen's descent among the group. Oh, she's bringing us down, kids. I'm kidding.
That's right. She's really going to make up for it with the next book. So.
Yeah, I know.
I'm actually nervous. Like, I'm so nervous to read Magnus Chase.
Because what if you hate it?
Yeah, I think I might just send in my resignation.
Oh, boy. All right, so the plot of The Scorpion Rules. And when I read the back of the book, I don't know about you guys, but I was thinking it was going to be about something different. So when you read the back of the book, is it the same vibe as when you actually got to read the book?
No.
I'm okay with that.
I thought that they were going to be, like, switching the hostages or something. Like, I didn't realize it was all going to take place in that one compound with all of them together.
Yeah. No, I knew that they were all captive together somewhere. So the back of the book is this. Greta is a duchess and crown princess and a hostage to peace. This is how the game is played. If you want to rule, you must give one of your children as a hostage, and you must keep the peace. Start a war and your hostage dies. Greta will be free if she can survive until her 18th birthday. Until then, she is prepared to die with dignity if she must. But everything changes when a new hostage arrives, a boy who refuses to play by the rules, a boy who defies everything Greta has ever been taught, a boy who opens Greta's eyes to the brutality of the system they live under, and to her own power. With her nation on the verge of war, Greta becomes a target in the new kind of game, a game that will end up killing her, unless she can find a way to break all the rules. So, with that description, I was not prepared for, like, the whole AI twist and how involved they were, and that it was actually the person in charge was artificially intelligent. Like, it was a robot, essentially, in a lot of ways. So I think that whole aspect of it really surprised me in a lot of ways. And I liked it because it surprised me. So, I don't know. What'd you guys think about that particular aspect? Because I think that's one of the biggest plot points that isn't kind of revealed in any way on the back of the book.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be more like these, like they were with their, I did know that they were going to a central location, but I wasn't sure how much contact they had with their families, because you learn as you're reading the book that they stay there till they're five. And then they get sent to this school and they kind of never see their parents again. But I was expecting more of like a high stakes situation where like they're with their, like they see their families all the time or something like that. Like I wasn't sure how this world worked. And when I read the back of the book, I was like, oh no. soon as it, like, said, like, this kid comes in who doesn't like to play by the rules, I'm like, oh, God, a romance in the heart of battle. Like, I just don't want to deal with that again. And I was not excited. I put off reading this book for a long time. I'm not going to lie. But my favorite part about the whole thing was this, like, the AI feature. I thought it was amazing. I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
And there's more than one of them.
And yeah.
What's super cool about the AI in this book is two of the main AI characters, Talis and Abbott, that we meet, were once human, and they became AI. Yeah,
it's like they uploaded their consciousness.
Right. So, which is super cool. I love it. I love that, like, science fiction-y aspect of it. And so the idea is, Talis was an AI, and he saw what was happening to the world. He saw that we were destroying it as humans, that we were fighting amongst ourselves, that we were destroying the polar ice caps. And at some point, part of that happens and we lose part of the world. So there is some global warming aspect to it as well. So Talis decides that he knows what's best and how, and he's going to help the people manage what's best. So instead of just going out and say, I'm going to take your children, he starts off with blowing up cities. Like, he's not making any bones about it. He's like, and I will continue to blow up cities unless you agree to my terms. So he went out and blew up a bunch of cities just to prove a point that he could be in charge and that he was in control and that he was going to take them all on if they didn't take care of themselves. So they agree to his rules. And as the book opens and as we move through the book, we hear about these utterances of Talis. And it's really funny because, like, Greta has very, very kind of specific speech pattern in a sense. And Talis is very, like, very, he's almost jokey. Like, he's always being sarcastic and, like, he's the funny guy. And so when you read this AI's comments and his utterances and then you read the actual characters, you're like, wow, that's so different. But I enjoyed how different they were. In a lot of ways. So you have these AI creatures, these beings. So Talis is the most feared and in charge. Abbott is the one in charge of, I think they're called preceptors, where the children lived. So children from certain areas would all go to one preceptor, and they were from all over the world. And in this specific one, there was Greta, who is from the Pan Poles, which is like Canada. There was Thandi, who is from Africa. There was Duzzy, who was from the Himalayas. Gregor was from, like, Eastern Europe. There was, his name is Sydney, I think. And he was from a neighboring country to Greta. And when the book opens, the biggest fear is that Greta's country and Sydney's country are on the verge of war. And if your country starts war, your life becomes forfeit. So the entire time that you are a child and into your teens, you are taught that you could die at any time. So anytime any war is enacted between a country and another country, both parties are forfeit.
And can I just say, I was a preceptor in college. That's what we used to call teacher's assistants. And this, we basically had the same ground rules.
Yeah, like, I know, like it. I like
until
it.
Until you graduate, you're at threat of being traded and killed. So,
it happens.
So, that's not my college. Say. Just, you know.
It's kind of normal, I guess.
I just kept thinking of those classes I had to go to because we had like group meetings, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like why did they use this word?
You're like, I'm having flashbacks. So I thought that concept was kind of cool. The only part I guess that bothered me was if. Say I had a country and Brittany had a country and Brittany attacked me. Why am I forfeiting my child if I didn't start war? Do you know what I mean? I guess it has to be equal, but at the same time, if I'm just defending myself, why is my child going to die? And I guess part of it is he wanted them to talk it out and find a way to work it out.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the part of it was like to really push them to be like, well, that's unfair, but maybe we can meet some sort of compromise so that right. doesn't have to happen to me.
Yeah. It's sad but true. It's, I don't know. It didn't always work that way. So, the very beginning of the book, there are these people called the Swan Riders. And they're meant to look like angels. They have wings. They have big wings. And they're human, from what I gather. And basically, they're the executioners. They all the children know is that you get taken into this room referred to as the Grey Room, and you're never seen again. So a swan rider approaches the school in, like, the first two chapters, and the swan rider is there for Sydney, but she is not there for Greta, because Sydney's people chose to fight with someone else. So Greta gets lucky, and she realizes that while she's willing to die, she's not really willing to die. So it's she's conflicted about what her role is, even though she knows that her life is essentially forfeit until she turns 18. So from there, the book kind of, we learn more about the school, we learn more about the characters, and the abbot is the person in charge of this particular precept. And he's an interesting character, because he kind of plays favorites, even though he's AI, he still kind of has more of a connection with Greta than to anybody else. So what did you guys think of the abbot as he progressed through the book?
I had no idea what to think of him, actually, because he was this, like, amazing character in the beginning, and I was like, oh, you know, he's the one person, the one AI that kind of has more humanity to him, and he really loves Greta, so it makes sense that, you know, he would kind of help her, and then he goes and tortures her, and then after that, he kind of comes back around, and he helps her again, and I'm like... And I felt this way about most of the characters, actually. I didn't know whether to trust them or not. I didn't know if they were really good or bad, or if it was just, like, a matter of circumstance.
I understand. So, Brittany, how about you? What did you think of Abbott?
I thought, I mean, because these two AIs, all right, full disclosure, I'm really into Person of Interest right now, and there are two battling AIs on Person of Interest, and one of them is, like, Abbott, and one of them is, like, Telus, so this was a little freaky. because Abbott was made by this guy, Finch, and I really hope at least one listener watches Person of Interest, they will get this, and they will thank me.
I know what you're
talking
about.
Okay, so Finch is Abbott, and Samaritan is Telus, and Finch's machine is, like, can have some compassion. Like, yeah, it leads to, like, some deaths along the line, like, but it's for the greater good. It's, like, teaching lessons, I guess. It, like, doesn't know. It all it wants to do is, like, protect people, but sometimes it hurts them, but it can't comprehend that because it's artificial intelligence. But then there's, like, Samaritan, who's, like, Telus, who's just, like, no. This is what the greater good is. Like, I'm doing everything in my power to make that happen, no matter what the results. Like, I'm achieving this initiative. And for better or for worse, that's how it's supposed to be. It's going to make humanity better. So I didn't actually see Abbott as being, like, this, like, you know, vindictive type thing. I'm like, oh, it doesn't know, because I'm like feeling, making it think that it's, like, Finch's machine. I'm like, oh, no, this, it just doesn't know. It's okay. It's like a puppy or something, but I don't know. I loved the differences between them. I really, really liked Telus, though. Like, loved it. Telus, whatever. I have this problem every book we read. I can't pronounce anything. But yeah, I thought that Abbott was fine. I mean, it was a little creepy when he, like, was, like, doing everything as part just to focus on Greta. But then at the same time, I'm like, well, you know, you pick someone. It's the person. It would be weird if he was focusing on someone not who was not the main character of the book, I guess. But yeah.
Yeah, I liked Telus and I liked Abbott. I think they made the book very different and very interesting. And Karen, I understand what you're saying about not really knowing where Abbott, where his loyalties were, and I think that's part of the problem with, or not problem, but part of the interesting part of so many of the characters, you're not quite sure where they are. And because the opening scene, we see Sydney and Greta, who come from these different places, who know that they could both die together because of their families fighting, even though they've essentially grown up together in this place. Do you know what I mean? So you kind of have this, yes, we're friends, but at the same time, you're technically my enemy because our countries could fight and we could both die because of it. So I think that plays throughout the whole book. And then we have some people like Dazee, who is Greta's roommate and in some ways her love interest too. And those, like, Z's country is always going to be at peace. They're in a very prosperous place. They're safe. It's not a country that's going to go to war, whereas Greta's life is always in danger. So there were kind of those dynamics too, where these two could be friends and it was safe because their countries were never going to fight each other, even though Greta's country could fight in general. So I think it was an interesting dynamic to watch how the different characters played off of each other. I don't know. And then we have Elyon, who shows up. And once Sydney is taken away, they basically, someone new has to now take over where Sydney's parents ruled, because they no longer have a child as a token, essentially, to Talis. Someone new now takes over. And so Elyon is very, very different than the others that are there. Elyon lived with his mother and stepfather, and they were sheep farmers. And Elyon's grandmother took power. And because she took power, Elyon, being her grandson, was the one that was forfeit. And he was basically taken prisoner. So instead of being raised in the life where you know you're going to be a child of peace, which is what they call them, and that you could die at any time, Elyon never had any of those expectations. And so for him being taken, he was basically taken as hostage. He was taken against his will. He was chained and he was locked up. And he fought a lot because he didn't want to be there. This was not his life and his upbringing. So what did you guys think of Elyon and his circumstance, given that he wasn't given a choice? He was just made forfeit because of his grandmother, not even his mother.
I loved that he challenged Greta. It challenged her views of what was going on. The fact that he said what he wanted to say, no matter the consequences, was a really powerful visual for me. And it was harder later on when you kind of saw the light in his eyes die. And when he kind of came back and, you know, he was that person he was initially, the one that just had no problem rebelling, no matter how much pain it caused him, because he knew what he was saying was the right thing to say. It was really great, and it really made me fall in love with his character. But I especially loved the impact that he had on Greta because of what he did.
Yeah, I thought he was a really, really good character to introduce into this world, because you get Greta and I was kind of like, okay, like I respect her for just kind of like I didn't want her to just succumb to like her fate, but I did have a lot of respect for her like sticking to it. Like she knew what was going on and like just wasn't willing to hear anyone else's opinion. But I love relationships in books. Like it doesn't even have to be romantic, it's platonic, it's whatever, but like where they're really challenging someone to be like, this is like, you should not just settle for this. Like, and the fact that he had such a different upbringing was just like, it really helped his story. And I really liked him when he came in, much more than I thought I would going into it based on the back of the book, because I thought like, oh, this is that bad boy coming in, you know, to like shake things up. But it was something completely different, and I really appreciated that it wasn't a cheap way out for her to be like, oh, this guy is so moody and dangerous. It wasn't that, and I really liked that it wasn't.
Yeah, I thought it was a great way to introduce him. And like you guys said, like reading the back of the book, I think you get a totally different perspective about what this book could be about. And so I liked that he was a character that came in, pushed the boundaries, challenged what everyone thought. Because it's not just Greta who thinks that this is okay and is willing to die and understand that they're, you know, they're this child of peace and this is my duty. And so I think a lot of them kind of could relate to Elyon and what he was doing. And so for the first time he comes onto the page, he's fighting, like fighting mad. And they use these kind of robots that help keep him in line, and they give him electric shocks and they do things to him to try to make him stop fighting. And that really just, it doesn't change who he is. He's always going to fight. And at one time he talks about how he has these little spiders on his body. And if he says anything inappropriate or negative, they like shock him. And it's such a horrible thing to think about. But he says it anyway, knowing the shock is coming, knowing that these things are happening. He doesn't care. He's still willing to say what's right in his mind. So I thought that was a really cool concept and the way that she played Elyon in the beginning part of the book. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Cumberlanders, which are the people... Actually, I lied. Let's talk about Z for a little bit. What did you guys think about Z as a character and who she was to Greta?
Loved her right from the very beginning. Absolutely loved her because she was this, like, ethereal, you know, goddess-like person who was... really much tougher than you would think she would be. And she rebelled in much, well, not in the same way that Elyon did, but she also rebelled in her own way. And, you know, she snuck out and she did what she wanted to do. And she kind of conformed, but she always kind of, you know, was walking that fine line. And I really appreciated that about her. And I thought that, you know, her relationship with Greta was so interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you, Karen. I thought that I loved her relationship with Greta as well. I thought that she was like a really good addition. Like I said, I liked her a lot. I thought that her and Greta's relationship was really interesting. And like, you know, she's just like this. I felt like she was so like, you could put whatever you wanted on Z. Like, you know, you can, like, think that she was, like, kind of in a relationship with one person, or she could be in a relationship with another person. Like, she was just very, like, such a fluid character, and I wanted her to kind of be in every scene. Like, she could just, like, I don't know. I wanted more of her, more than Greta, to be honest. I kind of wish that their roles were switched in this a little bit, if that makes sense. I don't know if you guys liked her that much, but
yeah, I really
she was just such a fluid character that I just wanted her to be a part of everything all the time.
Yeah, no, and I understand what you're saying. I think that she had a lot going on, and I liked her because she kind of got along with everybody in a lot of ways, and I think what she had to offer was different. Because here's the thing, when Z first kisses Greta, it didn't feel all that like out of the blue, and at the same time it felt a little surprising.
Yeah, that's, I think that's what I'm trying to like get at, is like this like weird, like everything I expect her to do she does, but everything I don't expect her to do she does, and I'm not shocked nor taken aback by either of them. I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you. I think there's something really unique about her character. I think a lot of it is, while she is a female character, there's this kind of neutrality to her as a character, if that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't necessarily, yeah. You know what I mean? I don't think she has to be classified. If you were just reading it and there were no pronouns, I wouldn't know.
Exactly. Yeah. I wasn't feeling like a strong, like, female camaraderie, like, you know, but not... necessarily not feeling like a, like, you know, like a platonic, like, male female relationship coming from her. She's just very, like, you know, different.
Exactly. And I think she was a really cool character and had a lot to add kind of to the whole story and just who she was and how she played in Greta's life. Because later on, like, well, sort of later on, Greta and Elyon kind of have a couple of moments too. And it doesn't feel vastly different. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like one's cheating on the other, or... And Z's kind of just okay with it. Like, there's this kind of, I don't know, this weird piece about the whole situation, which is unusual. Usually there would be, like, a love triangle, and it would be messy, and that's really not what happens within the book. So I kind of like how it played itself out with the two different kind of interests for Greta.
Uh-huh. I agree.
So I thought that was really cool. All right. So we kind of talked about their relationships. And like we said, Z definitely had other relationships. I thought it was really funny. They used to, the children or teenagers used to call, like, they would sneak out and like hook up, and they used to call it playing coyotes, which to me was super, like,
that was the, yeah, it was so thing. Weird. I was like,
that, Yeah.
Okay, all right.
I was like, okay, we'll go with that. So, I mean, there was kind of a bunch of stuff about that as well. And so about what, halfway through the book, when Abbott is punishing Greta for going out at night, which is odd because none of the children like ever get punished. They sneak out. They're allowed some things. They're allowed to get away with some things, and sneaking out is one of the things that they're allowed. But for some reason, the very first time Greta sneaks out, she gets punished. And a lot of that has to do with the Abbott recognizing that Greta has power. Because prior that day, she stood up and protected Elion. And she was trying to, you know, she got the others to follow her lead. And so she stood out as a leader. And there was a threat that the Abbott clearly felt when those moments happened. And Greta doesn't think she's powerful. She doesn't think she's in charge. But others recognize that within her as well, even though she doesn't recognize it herself. And so what did you guys think about that way that this kind of shift of power from the Abbott and the machines there being in control and from the students really realizing that they had a leader within their group?
My favorite part was that nobody challenged her. Like, it was just accepted, and she sort of accepted that role as well. And it wasn't about, you know, who could beat her, who could be on top. And that's what this book did a lot, is, like, it set up a lot of tropes and then completely blew them away. And that's what I meant in the beginning when I said I really like it in theory, because everything that you expect to happen doesn't happen. They completely twist it around and go in a different direction. And this was just one more way that it was like, you think Greta is the leader now and somebody's going to be upset by it and try to take her down, but nobody does. They just trust in her wholeheartedly.
Which I think speaks a lot to her character in ways that she didn't even recognize, like, you know, like she was so like steadfast and like kind of like, this is how things are, to herself. And she never made any of those moves to be this leader. But I think just her, the energy around her as a person, like stuck out to all these people all the time, and she never realized it. So that was kind of like cool to see, like, not such like a person who has this internal monologue of being like, oh, I wonder if they like me. Oh, I wonder if they don't like me. Like, you're used to seeing all those characters be proven wrong in books, but this person who believed so deeply in what she was doing have that effect as well. Like, that it was never like a second thought was surprising, because you're not getting that, like, the internal monologue being like, oh my God, I don't know. Like, that's just those like anxiety ridden people who are worried about what outsiders see, which I've read a lot of, which is fine. I don't mind them being proven wrong either. But in this case, it was another, in addition, like, in one of many shocks that I was not expecting.
I agree. I think there's some really cool aspects to Greta's character that we don't normally see. Do you know what I mean? I think there were, I don't know, there was just a lot going on with her. And I think what I liked most about her was that she was kind of shy and kind of quiet and knew her role, but at the same time kind of developed when things got really tough. So sometimes you would expect the shy, quiet girl to kind of stay shy and quiet. But when things got difficult, like, basically their preceptor gets invaded by the Cumberlands, who are Elion's people. His grandmother basically comes in and takes over and wipes out the AI. She damages Abbott, and her goal is to use Greta as a hostage and essentially torture her to get her mother to agree to give them rights to water. So I think there were some interesting things. Once she was put in the role where she was the device that was going to be used to make her mother bend, Greta became an entirely different person. And I think that was really cool, because she didn't become the person you thought she was going to be. Like you just said a minute ago, nothing was what we thought it was going to be throughout this whole entire book. Greta made a lot of choices that were different, that weren't hard, or that were hard, and that weren't what we would think that they would be. So basically, the Cumberlanders come in and take over, and they literally take out an old apple press, and they're, like, torturing Greta by pressing the apple press down onto her hands. If you guys have ever seen an old apple press, they're, like, bone-crushing once they start the press part. Like, it's not okay. Like, it's an ancient torture device, essentially. So these things kind of happened, and it was really interesting to see Greta transform throughout them. So what did you guys think of Elyon's grandmother? Because she was a treat, I think. She was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I thought that she was really, really interesting. It kind of explains why Elyon is the way he is, I guess, in a way. She was something. She was refreshing, a refreshing read, I will say. Because she was kind of unlike, like, any, again, this book is just unlike anything I've read before. And reading her was sort of like, you never knew what was coming next. And she, like you were saying, like, did all this stuff with Abbott and Indri. And, like, it was just so, the world was so interesting. And just to have her in it was, like, I was glad that there were more than just the kids and the AIs. Right. Like, there are all these other interesting characters that she's able to weave in and out of this book. And I think that Elyon's grandmother, she was just one of the stronger characters who was kind of secondary, but still made a huge impression.
Yeah, and she kind of started all of the other things in motion when she took over the area, when she took over the kids and the group. So, and of course, Elyon fights her quite loudly in front of her people. I mean, he's not afraid. So he came in fighting the Abbott and everybody else, and he fought his own family. Like, he fought his own people because he still didn't believe in the choices that they were making. So this character was really cool too, because he never stopped fighting in a lot of ways, because none of it was what he believed in. So he was going to fight as long and as hard as he could because it's not what he thought was right. So I thought that was really interesting. So, Karen, what did you think about Elyon's grandma?
I really liked the juxtaposition of her against Greta's mother, because, you know, this is like after, this is in the future. But in a lot of ways, you tend to forget that, because like we were saying, the way that Greta speaks is very old-fashioned, and her mother is wearing these big gowns with these wigs, and you think of like Victorian era. And then you have his grandmother, who comes in, and she's a strategist, and she's like military through and through. And so she feels a little bit more modern, like a little bit more ancient, maybe, in a way, like, you know, closer to our times. And I think it was interesting to see them kind of facing off and the decisions that they ended up making, knowing that they're children/grandchildren were on the line, but also that their entire population was on the line. Because I had a hard time hating Greta's mother for not having them call off the apple press, even though it was absolutely horrific. But she also had to think about, you know, all these other people back home that were looking to her to stay strong.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of ways the reason she didn't is that Greta's life was always forfeit. Like, always. It was never, like, whether it be she's being tortured with an apple press or she's going to die because someone started war, her life was always forfeit. And I think that when you give your child up in this instance, that's something you deal with until they're 18, until they're of age, and then they're free, and it's okay. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that that's a given. And so this was different than what happens. Usually when the children go and they die, it's way peaceful. You know, or as far as everyone knows, it's much more peaceful. It's quick and it's not drawn out. Whereas Elyon's grandma brought in a guy who specializes in torture, and his name is Tolliver Burr, I think. And in a lot of ways, I liked him and I hated him. Like, I love to hate him because he, like, was a specialist, and his job and his only job was to make the torture videos. And so he set up the lighting and the camera angles and the reaction shots. He was like a producer for the torture. Like, no joke. This was his job. And when you read him and how he's talking about things, you're like, oh my God, you have to be a loon to do this. Like, who does that? Like, whose job is it to do that? Mm-hmm. And so
He reminds me of another Burr that I really liked but also hated. Brittany, do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think so.
Okay. That was...
I was like, when you said Brittany, I was caught off guard, and I'm like, wait, oh God, I have to think. Hold on. I don't know. I don't want to
be wrong. We're talking about Hamilton.
Yeah.
As always.
I was like on the right page. I'm like, wait, is she throwing a Hamilton reference
at Yes, me? You totally missed the mark on that.
But this is the only podcast we haven't done a Hamilton reference on.
Exactly. That's why I had to bring it in. You were supposed to be my backup. You missed the mark.
I panicked.
Exit stage right. Okay, just go.
All right, so back to the story. now that you two have had your Hamilton moment, let's move on.
I will say, though, that I do actually understand what you were saying about Burr, because he had this personality that was, like, really interesting. Not charming, but he was so... eclectic that you kind of were drawn into him, and yet he was horrific. Like, he was probably worse than anybody else because he wasn't fighting for something like Elyon's grandmother was. You know, she was not necessarily a good person, but she had reasons to do everything she did. Whereas Burr switched sides as quickly as he possibly could because he just liked torturing people.
Yeah, no, like, he literally was the producer. And, like, I think he's charismatic in a way. When he speaks and you read him on the page, he's almost got this charisma. And you're like, but you're torturing people. I can't like you. But there's something very charming about him. Do you know what I mean?
It's all coming together.
So conflicted.
But that was also, like, Talis, too.
I have to admit, exactly. I loved Talis. About the voice of Talis that I was just like, oh my God, while you're a little, you know, psychopathic in a way, I get what you're trying to do. And just the way he says things and does things, it's just, he sucks you in and you're like, oh, you're bad, but I like you.
I honestly think he was my favorite character.
I was just about to say that, too. I was going to say, I think that Talis was my favorite character. And it's sort of like that Disney villain complex. Like, I hate everything that you're doing, but I want to watch and listen to you all the time. Like, I would go and hang out with Ursula if I could. Like, she's my favorite Disney villain. Well, besides Hades, but I was going to give that one to Karen.
We can share them. It's okay.
They're just like those type of people, like, you want to listen to, like, even though you're like, no, you're going to destroy everyone in, like, under the sea or in ancient Greece. I still just kind of want to, you know, go get a drink with you and hang out.
But, yeah, you know, by the end of the book, like, we definitely see his humanity. And even though what he's doing with Greta is very selfish, he's also saving her in a way, and I think that it shows that he's not completely bad, or that even if he's doing it for selfish reasons, like, he could potentially be doing it for other reasons too, because he knows that Greta is a good person and that she doesn't deserve the death that, you know, the other children of the peace have had to endure.
Right. So let's just talk about the end of the book. Let's just get there. So Talis basically shows up as in the visage of a swan rider. In fact, it's the swan rider we meet at the beginning of the book who comes in to kill Sydney. He's shifted bodies, essentially, and comes in to camp to face the Cumberlanders as a swan rider. And I think when he arrived and he was like, I'm Talis, everyone was like, oh. Because now there's serious trouble on the horizon. You have the AI in charge of it all just kind of hanging out. And I think I like the way he kind of makes these offhanded threats about, oh, well, maybe I'll just blow up this place. Or what about this place? Or, you know, what about this? So to Elyon's grandmother, he doesn't basically say, I'm going to kill you and your people here. It's, I'm going to blow up these cities. What are you going to do about it? How are you going to make this right? And so it's kind of interesting in a way to see how he kind of plays and manipulates. And when it comes down to it, in a lot of ways, Gretel's life is supposed to be forfeit. And because of that, there are some choices that need to be made. And so Greta gets a choice. She can die, or she become artificially intelligent. She can become one of, you know, like Talis and like Abbott. So she makes the choice to become an AI. And she only makes the choice because she can bargain for her friend's safety. So essentially, Greta chooses that she will, that Talis should let the Cumberlanders go and go back. She makes a deal with her mother for them, I believe, to get water. She protects Z, and she protects Elyon. Because here's the thing, Elyon's life is forfeit, period, because of what his grandmother did. But by Greta making the choice that she does, she protects him. Sends him off, changes his name, he no longer has to be a child of peace. Which is selfless in a lot of ways. She's trying to protect those around her without really worrying about what's to become of herself. So that was really interesting because, again, Greta's mind was always that she was forfeit. So her mind is still sort of in that way that she's forfeit, but it's in a much different way. We're looking at it in a way that she gets to choose what kind of forfeit. Does she die or does she become artificially intelligent? So I think that was really interesting. And one thing that I think is kind of layered throughout the book is this idea that there's a power in the choosing. So what did you guys think about, like, how Greta's path kind of diverges even more than what we expected?
I mean, I thought it was a really, as odd, I guess, as it was to watch unfold, I think after thinking about it for a while, like, you listening to you recap it, it made me think, like, it actually seems almost more natural because you have this world that's like these basically like uploaded human consciousness are like able to make these really strong decisions and kind of go like teeter back and forth. And this girl, like, you kind of expect her to be like, no, I'm sticking to my guns. And when she doesn't, and she kind of like is given all this power, sort of like when the consciousness is uploaded, like, you don't know what they're going to do. And so she's almost like, I felt now that, like, she's kind of like a third AI almost, because she has all these people who are looking to her to be a leader. She has to sort of like weigh options and think about, like, you know, what is my purpose now? Like, how do I want my story to play out? And I thought that made it for a much more interesting overarching story for her.
I love the idea that you said that she's sort of like a third, like a different kind of AI, because in the end, when she tells Z that she loves her, like, that's kind of huge, because you think that all this time she's losing her humanity, and yet to be able to profess that love means something big. And let me tell you, if like Z is the narrator of the next book and it's all about her trying to find Greta, like, yes, I will read that absolutely, because I thought that was such an interesting twist. And it, you know, the whole like love conquers all thing is kind of old hat, but for it to be between Z and Greta, I thought was really beautiful. And the way that we weren't really sure where her head was up until that moment. Like, I think it was like one of, if not the last lines of the book. And you're like, oh, this kind of changes everything.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I think I liked the way it ended. I kind of liked the way it ended. But at the same time, it kind of left it wide open for what comes next. Do we know more about Greta? Do we learn more about what happens to the other Children of Peace, the ones that have been set free? You know, do we follow Elyon and figure out who he's going to become? Do we follow Z to figure out if she still starts searching for Greta and what happens to Greta? Because Greta is basically now going to spend an awful lot of time with Talis. She's essentially going to be like his right-hand girl in a lot of ways, even though she's incredibly different from Talis and from Abbott. She's probably the most human AI that they've ever seen. other than Talos, who switches forms. So it'll be interesting to see, I think, like you said, Karen, where it goes next and who kind of, who they follow and how their journeys change or how they come back together in a lot of ways. So, all right. Do you ladies have anything else to say about the Scorpion rules?
This is the first book we've read where I'm going to buy the sequel.
Woo! Yay!
Hopefully next month will be the second one.
Hopefully next month inspires me to go and read an entire series.
Yes. Actually, I did promise.
Do you see how much pressure there is?
I did promise you that I would send you the series.
Oh, right. And I'm sending you something, aren't I? I think. Maybe not.
Yeah, what was it? Artemis Fowl?
Oh, yeah. That's what it is. It's Artemis Fowl.
Oh, gotcha. Interesting. That could work. I could see that playing out. So, nothing more for the Scorpion Rules, except Brittany loved it. She can't wait for the sequel. Bring it on. Yay. And Karen was like, eh, it's pretty good. I liked it, but...
We'll see.
Well, I'll read it first, and if Z is the narrator and it's all about her, then maybe we can
convince Karen.
Let you borrow it.
Thanks, I think.
All right, so just so everyone knows, we will be away next week because we're all going to be in New York at New York Comic Con. And I don't know, Brittany, are you going or are you just coming to, like, say hey?
I'm just coming to hang out.
Yeah, that's good, too. We like that. So we will all be together. We'll send you guys funny pictures via Book Hype because there's a lot going on at New York City Comic Con, including the Shadowhunters panel. So any of you who cannot wait to learn more about the Shadowhunters, please make sure you're paying attention to at Book Hype because I will be live tweeting that panel. And I get to talk to the actors, so I'm kind of excited.
I really hope that Harrison Jr. shows up with the glitter in his hair because
it would be helpful. So I kind of need, that needs to happen. So definitely. And I'm doing Jessica Jones, which is the new Marvel TV on Netflix. Kind of excited about that too. Karen, what are you doing? You're doing cool stuff.
Teen Wolf. Always Teen Wolf.
Is there Teen Wolf there? Really?
Yes. Yes, there is.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be fun. Also doing the Shannara Chronicles press. Danya will be doing the panel because they booked it at the same time as the Teen Wolf press, which makes no sense to me. But, whatever. But I get to talk to the cast again, which is pretty cool. Getting more excited about that show every day because I think it's going to be amazing. And I don't know. What else am I doing?
I don't know. I'm doing Supergirl, too. Totally forgot about that.
I'm going to a TV writers workshop that's half affiliated with Comic-Con, half not affiliated with Comic-Con. Well, so I'll be doing that on Saturday.
That'll be cool.
And then I'm drinking with the Book Hype people, so that'll be even more fun.
That makes it the most fun. I don't know what you're talking about. All right, so... Y'all have our plans for the weekend now. Have a good one yourselves. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. And, of course, Magnus Chase is out on Tuesday, and it will be our Book Hype Book of the Month for October. Because Karen wouldn't let us do anything else, basically. So, until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Karen.
Bye, guys.
Bye.